Bible reading this morning is from Luke. If you'd like to follow along, you'll find it on page 1031 of your Bibles, chapter 12, beginning at verse 22. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the lilies grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it. For the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will not be exhausted, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also."
Good morning, 10 o'clock. Great to see you. Great to be with you today. In case you've been on another planet, these things are called loom bands. And by the sounds of things, you have seen them before. You may be swimming in them like some of the houses we know. Look, this is the latest craze to hit our shores. It's been through the US, it's been through Britain, and now it's Australia's turn. And this seems pretty innocent. The loom bands are there to make little wristband things like these sorts of things. And you can tell something is a craze when it gets banned from schools, right? And schools go, "That is enough of that." Absolutely enough, like these have been. Personally, I like this particular craze because it has the potential to benefit me. I might be able to get fitted out in something like this. Now we'll see who's the exotic, colourful pastor, Eric, when I get one of those, eh? There's always been fads and crazes that go through schools when you're a kid. I wonder if you remember the fads and crazes that went through when you were at school. I remember everybody trying to do round the world with a yo-yo until the windows got smashed and then they got banned from school. I remember trying to work out the comparative value of bonkers to kings when the marble craze went through school until there were some riots about some of the trades going on in the playground. They got banned from school as well. There have been all sorts of things. Tamagotchis, remember these? Electronic pets that you're supposed to feed virtual food when they beep or they die and clean up their virtual droppings or they get sick and then they die. What a wonderful idea that is for all the families that got blessed with those things. They got banned from school as well. There were Tazos, which are really the forerunner to the supermarket cards that have kind of gone through the schools at the moment and which have had parents, maybe some parents attending this particular congregation, trying to do trades on Facebook to sort it out for their kids and get them happy and get the full set. Whatever the craze it was, do you remember how you felt when you didn't have the thing that everyone else had? I remember when the yo-yo thing came into our school, and there were these really cool kind of see-through yo-yos, and they really spun really well when you flicked them, And my parents wouldn't let me get one of the new, cool, clear, see-through yo-yos. They said, your brother, who was 9 years older, your brother had one. You can just take his, this daggy, white, old plastic thing. And I looked around at all the horizon of see-through, clear yo-yos going round the world and walking the dogs. And I had this clunky old piece of plastic. And I thought, how come they've got it and I don't? How come I'm behind the rest of the world at all of this? In some ways, we never really grow out of that, it seems to me. As a culture, we always seem to be looking sideways at what everyone else has got. And everywhere we look, everyone around us seems to have more, or they seem to have better stuff than what we've got. It's not surprising in a way, because we live in a media-saturated world that feeds this discontent. Classic example of this. You've probably seen it on the TV at the moment, the ad for a particular car, right? The father arrives home in a new car, a brand new car. The son, the little boy, is waiting there in the driveway. Father drives in, the boy waiting, looks at me and he said, you bought a Jeep? The father goes, I bought a Jeep. Not quite like that. That's how I see that going in my head. I bought a Jeep. The little boy doesn't say, oh, that's great, or wow, thanks, Dad, that'll be awesome. He goes, guess we got to buy a bigger boat. Like, really? Now, I know that's an ad and it's designed to be funny, but we laugh. It's kind of scary, really. That sentiment underlies all of our advertising. You don't have enough, say the ads. You don't have enough. And whatever you have, it's not good enough. It's old. It's got to be replaced. And I wonder if that's ever been your experience. I wonder if you found yourself looking sideways at other people and saying, I wonder if I just had a little bit more. If only I had just a little bit more. And look, many of us do think this, not because of some sort of rampant, extreme, overt greed. We're not like Wolf of Wall Street kind of types. Well, at least I'm not. I'm not sure about some of you, right? But some of us do that for reasons of security. We think, wouldn't it be great to have just a bit more so that we could protect ourselves from movements in the stock market or movements in the dollar or movements in the interest rates or movements in the federal budget. Wouldn't it be great to have just a little bit more so that we could set the kids up? I mean, we all know the price of real estate in Sydney, and that's only going to get worse. Wouldn't it be great to have just a little bit more so that we could, you know, just not be so stressed, and we could relax, and we could take it easy? You know, the funny thing is that you probably thought the same thing 5 or 10 years ago, when you actually did have less. And here you are, 5 or 10 years later, when you do have just a little bit more, and still unsatisfied. I wonder why that is. I wonder if it's because money and stuff can't quite settle our minds like we hope it would. I wonder if it's because money and stuff can't really provide the security that we long for. Long-term security, really long-term security, security that will sustain us even past the grave. Wouldn't it be great to escape that kind of thinking, that never have to look sideways again and come and look at yourself or look whoever's around you wondering how you measure up against them? Wouldn't it be great to escape that, to grab hold of something that puts all of our striving for money and stuff into such perspective that we can remain calm and confident, come what may? Jesus brings that sort of peace to that sort of anxiety. And this morning I want to show you from the Bible what Jesus has to say about this and what he brings to that situation. And I want to give you a chance to grab hold of this peace for yourself if you've never done it before. So let's have a look at what Jesus has to say. We're basing our time in the Bible reading that was read for us from Luke chapter 12. There should be a Bible in the seats in front of you. If you don't have your own one on a device, I'd really love you to grab the Bible, turn up that chapter. I want you to see that what I'm saying is right there in the Bible. I just want to point you to what is there. We're in Luke chapter 12. And what Jesus does first is he opens up what the problem is. And the problem is false security. Now, inheritances can always cause problems. Neville Ran, you have seen, died. Our former state premier died last month, and he died leaving millions. And I read in the news about all of those who'd ever been involved in his life, all sort of coming out of the woodwork, saying, "Ah, oh, yes, I might be entitled to a piece of that. Thank you very much." I read an even sadder story a few months back of a lady who died in Sydney. In an inner suburb of Sydney, she lived alone, and it took over 6 months for anybody to find her body in the place where she lived. And it was so decomposed, they had to do special testing to work out who she was. Once they did establish her identity and realized what her estate was that she left, then all the relatives came out of the woodwork and said, "Oh, by the way, yeah, she was part of my family. Yeah, I'd be entitled to some of that. Thanks very much." Well, here in this passage, we have another inheritance claimer coming out of the woodwork when they hear the famous rabbi has come to town. This is the passage just before the one that was read. Just go back a few verses with me to chapter 12, verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Hey, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" And then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And there you have it. Just like a doctor, Jesus gives his diagnosis of one of the major problems plaguing the human race. A wrong definition of life, of what life is all about, of what the good life really is. And if you get what life is all about wrong, then you get securing what life is all about wrong as well. And to help us get that picture, Jesus tells a story. Verse 16, he told them this parable. "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I've got no place to store my crops.' And then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. And there I'll store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you've got plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. And then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God.'" The man in Jesus' story, he's got the wrong definition of life. He thinks that life does consist in an abundance of possessions. And in this way, he's very contemporary. He's very much like Sydneysiders in the new millennium. He goes for the same solution that Sydneysiders go for. More storage. Bigger barns. And if that is what life, if life is all about what you have, then having more means you have a better life, right? That makes sense. And if that's the case, that means two things. First, you've got to find somewhere to put it all. And secondly, you will always be looking around to see what you have compared to others. How do I work out where I fit in this life? How do I work out where I fit in this community? How do I work out where I fit in the wider community? I look at how much stuff. The value of my stuff. And you will always see people ahead of you. Always. And it will make you miserable. It will make you feel like you felt when you missed out on the craze. How come they have that? And I don't. But the punchline to Jesus' story shows a real problem with this outlook. Life is not really about how much stuff you've got. It's about recognizing that we are not the ones who are ultimately in control of our destiny. It's about recognizing the God who made us in His image and about being in a relationship with Him. That's what Jesus is talking about when He says that we should be rich towards God. And so, if that's what life is all about, then to love the stuff that He provides without loving Him, that seems kind of perverse, doesn't it? It's a bit like the kid who keeps expecting their parents to pay for everything that they do without ever giving them the time of day or bothering to say thank you. And I think we can all recognize how ugly that is if we see that in people that we know. You know, that's not right when we see that. But it's even uglier when we realize that that describes people and their relationship with God. I'll have the stuff, pass on the relationship, thanks very much. The other problem with thinking that life is about how much stuff we have is that it makes no difference to our real fear, to the real thing we want security for, and that's death. They say that death is human beings' second biggest fear. They reckon that the biggest fear is actually public speaking, which means that most of you would rather be dead than be here doing what I'm doing right now, if that's right. But I'm not sure that it is the second biggest. I mean, we as a culture, we don't like death. We don't talk about it much. We like to hide it away. We don't like any signs reminding us that death is getting closer. There is an obsession in our culture with youth and being young and hiding any signs of aging. Can you walk through the towers now without being offered wrinkle cream? They almost have a running start now. I want to put the fend out like a prop forward. Get out of here. Can't you see how beautiful I already am? We don't like death. We don't like being reminded that it's coming. But the reality is, the last time I checked, the mortality rate is still hovering somewhere around the 100% rate. And money cannot stop this. This man's bigger barns filled up couldn't stop God taking his life at the appointed time. And when we meet God, like this man did in the story, we're called to give an account for the life that we've lived. Hebrews 9 says, man is destined to die once, and after that, to face the judgment. So here's the problem, right? As Jesus lays it out, there's no security in money. It distracts us from being rich towards God, and it fails to protect us from the reality of death. And so if you bank on that as a way of life, you're going to spend your days in worry. That's the first part of what Jesus has to say. Now, you have to really see the problem before you can see the solution. And Jesus is going to give us the solution, the answer, in two parts as this passage continues here. So let's have a look at those two parts in turn. The answer, part one, is that God provides our needs. God provides our needs. Now, I remember when I was in late high school, I think it was, when the movie Cocktail came out. Anybody remember that? Anybody have a go at trying to turn the bottles and end up with smashed glass all over there? Yeah, maybe it was just me. It was a huge hit, that movie, Cocktail, Tom Cruise and Brian Brown and all that. But an even bigger hit was the song from the soundtrack, Don't Worry, Be Happy. You might have heard of it. You might remember it. It was a catchy, very skillfully performed a cappella number whose basic message was, when you dig a little bit into the lyrics, the basic message of that song is that life may really be terrible for you, but just pretend that it isn't. Because otherwise, everyone else around you will be really miserable. Wonder, don't believe me? Have a look at the words. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no style, ain't got no girl to make you smile. Well, but don't worry. Be happy. Because when you worry, your face will frown. And that will bring everybody down. So don't worry. Be happy. That is some outlook on life. How depressing. Whatever bad stuff you're going through, just deny it. Everyone else will thank you for that. How depressing. I better not say how depressing that is, because that'll bring you all down and my frown's going to bring you down. Jesus also says, don't worry. But he says it for very different reasons. Look with me, Luke 12, verse 22. Jesus said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you'll eat, or about your body, what you'll wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They don't sow or reap. They've got no storeroom or barn, like the guy in the story I just told you. Yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. And who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wild flowers grow. They do not labor or spin. And yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. And if that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And don't set your heart on what you'll eat or drink. Don't worry about it. The pagan world runs after such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and all these things will be given to you as well. Jesus says, don't worry. And he gives two reasons. Firstly, life is not about stuff. He's already said that. There's far, far more to life than the material things of food and clothing and all of that sort of stuff. And so looking sideways all the time is pointless. Life is not a competition to fill your barn. So don't worry about that. Don't get hung up about that. But secondly, he says you're made and cared for by a loving God. Jesus gives the examples of the ravens and the lilies that they're cared for by God, even though neither of them are made in God's image. The grass is so fleeting. It's here today, tomorrow, when it's in a furnace. It becomes ash. If that's how much God looks after those things, then how much more will he look after those whom he's made in his image? Those who he can call his sons and daughters. Those whom he has alone out of creation made that they could call him Father. Now, some people hear this and they say, well, that's all very well, but what about people who are starving? Does that mean that they're not trusting God? And that's a good question. It's a good point. But it's important not to take these verses in isolation from the rest of the Bible. See, what you see in the rest of the New Testament is the reality of poverty. Jesus himself even says at one stage that the poor will always be with you. Not because that's the right thing, but because the sinfulness of humanity continues to oppress people in all different parts of the planet. Corruption, greed, filling your own barn rather than sharing it with others. That's the state of the human heart, which has consequences in the world. And even in the pages of the New Testament, Paul the Apostle repeatedly speaks of the collection that he is making to send to the Christians in Jerusalem who are facing famine. They're starving. And so even then and still today, Christians are called on to do good to the world and especially to other Christians who are facing poverty. And so in that, to be the means of God's provision to those people. That's why our church is involved in with Compassion, where we sponsor over 500 kids. It's why we've been involved with the Digging the Well project in Olentoto. That's why we're looking at the next thing. It's why we build all the houses that we built. The bigger point that Jesus is making here is that if you acknowledge that life is more than stuff and that we're created by a God whom we can call Father, then the underlying restlessness about what stuff we have can be replaced by a calm confidence in God's goodness towards us. That's the first part of the answer. The second part of the answer shows why even those without can hear Jesus' words here and know peace. Because the answer part two is that God provides real treasure. God provides real treasure. Now, Beck and I went to the movies on Friday, which was a lovely experience. And I won't tell you what the movie is in case you haven't seen it yet. But what was fascinating in the movie that we went to see was that the main character was confident, had this air of confidence about him all the way through the movie, despite kind of terrible things that he was doing to other people. He kind of remained calm and balanced and was able to sort of trot his way through all these different relationships. And he was confident because the whole time he thought that all the money that he was making was safe and secure in some offshore bank that nobody knew about. Right? He thought his treasure was safe and it flowed through into the confidence for the rest of his life. He thought nobody and nothing can get at it. It was secure. But as the movie unfolds, it wasn't. People found out where the treasure was. People found out a way to get it. And when he discovers at the end of the movie that it's been taken, that his whole treasure, everything that he was kind of banking on, relying on, is gone, not a cent left, he absolutely melts down. He loses the plot in this spectacular, out of control kind of way. His whole world falls apart. Now, it's not that doesn't just happen in the movies. I know of a retired couple who lost the bulk of their savings in the GFC. And then what happened was interesting. It wasn't just that their money was gone. Their whole world crashed. Their emotional capability to cope crashed. Relationships suffered. Their whole world fell apart because the treasure that they had and they thought was secure had gone. Now, Jesus says that the desire to have a treasure that provides a security, he says that's actually a right desire. God's put that within us. To have a treasure that brings us security is a right desire. The problem is that we don't look for the treasure in the right place. Look what he says in verse 32. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus says that there is a treasure so great that provides you with so much security that you could even sell your possessions and give them to the poor. Such would be your relationship with the physical stuff of this world. He says you could have a treasure so great that it wouldn't faze you to put a dent not just in your cash flow, but in your capital worth. You could put a dent in that, such is the security that this treasure would provide. Now, how is that possible? The answer lies in the rest of what Jesus came to do. It was interesting, Thursday night, we had Dr. Peter Bolt here speaking about the historical Jesus, and he was talking about the nature of the documents that we have that testify to Jesus, the Gospels in particular. He says, these documents are unlike any other documents in the ancient world. Biographies, in particular, would go through and chart each different stage of a person's life, all the way through from their beginnings to their success. But the Gospels, they got a little bit about Jesus' birth, nothing about his childhood, nothing about his adolescence, nothing about his 20s. Then they get to the last 3 years of his life, spend the time there. But actually, they spend most of the time on the last week of his life, and then really in the last hours of his life. That's how heavily biased these documents are towards the end of Jesus' life. Why? Because that's where the treasure is. 2 Corinthians 8 verse 9. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake and mine, he became poor, so that you and me, through his poverty, might become rich. He's not talking about being rich in the sense of money, the abundance of possessions. He's talking about being rich towards God, like Jesus was in the first story that we saw. In other words, Jesus was rich in the sense that he had a perfect relationship with God the Father, that he treasured him above everything else. But for our sakes, he became human and took on himself our sin, all the ugliness that it was ours for valuing the stuff that God gave us more than the giver himself. Jesus takes all of that on himself. That's what it means that he became poor. He took all the punishment for all of that on himself. And through his death and resurrection, he opened the way for us to be in relationship with our Heavenly Father again, the Father who gives, who provides. He was rich towards God where we've failed. And his richness towards us means that you and I now can be rich beyond measure with the treasure of the kingdom of God. And when your treasure is in heaven, nothing can take it. Nothing can touch it. No GFC, no famine, no nakedness, no sword, no wealth levy, nothing. And when nothing can touch it, you have real security, you have peace, freedom from the restlessness of how this stuff matters. So my question then is, do you have it? Do you have that peace? Do you know how rich you are because of what Jesus has done for you? Have you grabbed hold of that? That might flow through all of your life and all of your decisions and release you from that restlessness. If you don't, I want to give you a chance to grab hold of it right now. And you can. Right now you can grab hold of it. In a moment, I'm going to ask us all to bow our heads and close our eyes while I pray this prayer. Let me tell you what the prayer says. It's up on the screen. It says this. It says, I'm sorry that I've not been rich towards you or valued you above everything else in my life. Thank you that Jesus took my spiritual poverty that I might have the eternal riches of relationship with God. Please help me to treasure God above all in my life that I might know his peace in all circumstances. That's the prayer. Now, the promise of God is that if you pray that prayer this morning, right now, and mean it, then the eternal inheritance of the kingdom is yours. Jesus said, the Father wants to give you the kingdom. Give it to you as a gift. Instead of you struggling and straining to have to earn it. And he can give it to you right now if you want to pray this prayer. So I'm going to ask everybody, because even though you may not want to do it, the person beside you, in front of you, behind you, they might want to do it, and you would serve them if we all do this together. So can I ask us all to bow our heads and close our eyes right now? If this is not for you, that's okay. It might be for the person in front of you or next to you. I'm going to pray this prayer line by line slowly. And if you want to make this your own, echo it in your mind, and God will hear you right now. Dear God, I'm sorry that I have not been rich towards you or valued you above everything else in my life. Thank you that Jesus took on my spiritual poverty that I might have the eternal riches of relationship with God. Please help me to treasure God above all in all my life, that I might know his peace in all circumstances. Amen. Thank you for doing that. Now, If you have prayed that prayer right now for the first time, can I tell you what is going on? The Bible tells us that there is a party in heaven. The angels rejoice over one person who grabs hold of the kingdom for the first time. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And we want to be able to help you to know what the next steps are in the journey that you've just begun. So to do that, I'm going to ask everybody right here in the building right now, everybody, could you find one of these cards that Eric was talking about before that says, "We're glad you're here today"? If everybody can do this, again, you might serve the person who's next to you or behind you or in front of you who might not be feeling okay about doing this. You can serve them if you just grab a pen and you're writing something down. Because I'm guessing there's a number of different types of people in the building right now. And every one of you can fill something in on this card with integrity. Okay? I'm not asking anybody to say something that's not true of them. You might be here this morning. And you have heard what I've had to say about Jesus. Someone might have brought you along because we're doing this month in May where we're trying to show people what Jesus brings to life. You might be here with a family member. You might have heard what I've had to say and you're going, "Thanks very much, but no thanks, that's not for me." And if that's the case, well, thank you for listening to me, for staying to the end and not walking out. You've done my confidence a world of good. So if you've done nothing else this morning, you've built me up by staying in the building. So thank you very much for that. I'd love to hear some feedback from you. You can just say, "I'm visiting today, no thanks," and you can tell me what you liked or didn't like about coming to St. Paul's today. Tell us about the car park or the building, or give us some feedback that might help us to make things better for another visitor like you in the future. We'd really value that. That'd be great. You might be in the building and you might have heard what I had to say and you thought, "Well, I don't want to jump in just yet. I didn't pray the prayer, but you know what? I've got some questions. And I need to have them answered." That's great. We'd love to help you to answer those questions. There's a box there where you say, "I've got a question." Or if you want to get a sustained chance to answer questions, you could tell us you'd like to do Christianity Explained. Put your name and a contact, an email or a phone number, and we'd love to get in contact with you. Help you to work out what the questions are and what the answers are. So let us know. You can write that down right now. You might be in the building and you've said, "Yes, you prayed a prayer like that some years ago. And you have known the peace that Jesus brings." Fantastic. Let us know that. You can say, "Today, I enjoy a relationship with Jesus." You can cross out the word there on the bottom box. Tick that. Let us know. But the fourth type of person is you might have prayed that prayer for the very first time this morning. And we want to know, again, so we can get some information to you. We've got a gift for you today. Eric's going to tell you about it in a moment. But we'd love to know so that we can serve you. We can help you know what the next steps are. So let us know a name and a contact and say, "Today I started a relationship with Jesus." And that would be a wonderful blessing. If everybody can take a moment right now, grab a pen, grab a card, fill something in on the card. In a moment, the band's going to come and sing our final song. There'll be a chance for you to put those cards into the offertory bag as that comes around. And God bless. Have a great morning.